such a pleasure to see so many people here. I didn't know from that seat, but this is just a full room, which means there's so many people who are interested in this topic, which feels so good. I want to start off with some facts, if you guys are okay with that.
Ipsos. Love facts.
Facts. Everybody okay with facts? Yeah, because I feel like sometimes we don't have a baseline because we don't agree on the facts. So let's get that out of the way. So there are 65% of people, according to Ipsos, they did a poll, they interviewed about 19,000 people across the world between the ages of 18 and 64 about fake news. 65% think that other people live in a bubble on the internet, mostly looking for their own opinions. But get this, 34% say they live in a bubble. So what does that mean? That means that we think we're woke, but everybody else is not, right? 63% are confident that they can identify fake news, but only 41% think the average person can identify fake news. So I thought that was an interesting stat to start this conversation. Obviously, misinformation is not something new. Ever since the first person uttered the first lie to try to sway someone else's opinion, we've had misinformation. We've had in history... we've had media manipulating opinions. So this isn't something new, but it is digital now, and it is everywhere now. So let's start off by both of you talking us through what form media manipulation is taking this election. Are parties playing with specific techniques that you're seeing right off the bat? I'll start with you, Kaylee.
I think that the most important distinction to make, and that I've seen the most online, is people have this idea that disinformation is fake news. It's, you know, a website in Macedonia that's just making up stories that are sensational to get people to share it, and that is a component, but largely it's more this sort of manipulative, sensational take on actual facts or actual news. So there'll be a nugget of truth in there that's then been layered with these emotions and opinions and political framing and spin to the point where the actual truth is kind of hard to recognize, but then if you go to debunk it, that's also hard to do because there is some truth in it. And it's so much more insidious than just a fake news story that you can easily debunk and say, well, that's not true. Here's seven other sources that prove it.
Mm-hmm. Ala Earth is flat. Now, we're talking more, I guess, emotional-based, but also even fear-based, you know, fake news or misinformation.
Right. Well, I think that it's important to recognize what misinformation or disinformation is not. And it's not reporters making mistakes. Mm-hmm. Reporters do make mistakes all the time, and we have a process on how to correct those mistakes. What disinformation is an issue, is systemic manipulation of social media to get an audience to understand a point, to either engage with it emotionally or act on it in some way. And usually those emotions are negative ones that are being called to front. It's fear, it's anger, mm-hmm. because those are things that really make us sort of jump a little bit, make us want to get into an argument with a stranger online, make us want to send that article around. And a lot of disinformation sort of plays into existing issues that society already grapples with. So think of how prevalent immigration has been as an issue, not just in this election, but globally in disinformation campaigns, despite the fact that immigration is not a top issue for political campaigns. So I think that it's really important to sort of understand that disinformation seeks to change the conversation and not necessarily, you know, wave a big Russian flag around and say, vote Putin, he rides bears.
All right. I'll turn it back over to you. What information have you found in your research? What's happening here in Canada when it comes to this topic?
Well, as I said, sort of that more nefarious blending of truth and fake news, and definitely playing on the emotions, as Jane mentioned, fear, anger. It's tapping into things that people are already concerned about, but maybe aren't super informed on. Things like immigration is a great one. Also healthcare, the economy, the environment. You know, these are issues that are top of mind for campaigns, and they're kind of ripe for disinformation because people are emotionally invested in them and may not be super well informed in all aspects of it. So that's where we're seeing a lot of the disinfo online. And just sort of strange, you know, examples where it's really difficult to debunk, as I said. So there'll be things like a fake quote that somebody's made up and put on a meme, and it gets shared around constantly for like 2 years. I'm thinking of a specific example. And
you want to give it to us?
Well, there's a few actually that are, you know, it'll have an image of Prime Minister Trudeau and a completely made up quote that cannot be cited anywhere other than this meme, but it's been spread so much. And because you can't find the original source or anything like it, it's hard to debunk because you're like, well, if he didn't say exactly this, but he didn't say something like it, well, where did this come from? And it's really confusing for people.
My favorite flavor of that meme is like Justin Trudeau alongside like very wonky math. I remember once it was like, with the amount of spending on the budget, each Canadian could get $1 million because it's $32 million that we would save. And it's like, no, each Canadian would get $1.
All right. So we've talked a bit about Canada. Can we talk a bit about the breed of third party, I guess, organizations, if I can call them that, that we've seen here in Canada coming out, like Canada Proud, things like that?
You can go ahead. you go. What do you want to know about them?
Well, how do they fit into this topic? How do they fit into, because these are not organizations that are, you know, are they affiliated or are they not affiliated? I mean, these are the things that we see a lot in our social media feeds.
Right.
So depending on who you are, I guess, in the algorithm that's kind of playing at that.
Absolutely. So I think, first of all, it's important to note that third parties, so not the traditional political parties, have played a role in Canadian politics for a long time. But in the past, they were groups that had what I like to call a day job, you know. So they were unions, or they were the Taxpayers Federation, or they were think tanks. And so the rest of the time, they were doing other things. And then when the election season came around, they'd raise some funding, and they'd put an ad on TV saying, vote this way or vote that way. We could kind of process that and understand what was happening in the context of our elections. We're all familiar with it. This new breed that kind of really emerged with the provincial elections in Ontario and Alberta, they're only focused on campaigning. They're much more similar to like the PACs that we see in the United States, where all they're about is raising money for an election and doing campaigning, and that's it. And they're obviously, you know, they lean one way or the other. They're not strictly, you know, formally associated with any particular party, but they clearly favor certain policies, certain parties, certain candidates. And they're able to, because they're not the official party, be a lot more daring with the kind of messaging they use. They can push it a little further than the actual parties would ever dare to do. And they certainly frame things and spin things and cherry pick certain facts. So they toe the line, I would say, of disinformation and political spin. And what's dangerous about them, in my opinion, is that because they're new and the way that they're so prevalent and savvy on social media, it can be hard to tell like who they are, who's paying for this, what do they want? Is this a news organization that my friend shared? It looks like a blog post. It looks like news, but it seems kind of spun in a weird way. So it's really hard to kind of filter through that, I think, especially when you're using your social media feed as a news aggregator and you're getting tons of different sources and these are getting sprinkled in. It makes it really difficult to tell versus, you know, a traditional TV ad that says paid for by the Canadian Taxpayers Federation.
Right. Anything to add on that, Jane?
Yeah, a little bit of shameless self-promotion over here. BuzzFeed News partnered with the Toronto Star to help cover disinformation during this election. And one of the articles that we did looked at Facebook pages for some of these partisan entities on both the left, like North 99, and the right, like Ontario Proud, Canada Proud, the post-millennial, and compared them to both national media and newspapers in Canada's five largest cities. And what we found is that posts, especially video and image posts, from the partisan players outperform the majority of local media that we've compared them to. And part of it is because of how Facebook and Facebook's algorithm ranks the type of content that we're presented with. So we tend to engage with content that is much quicker for us to read or to see, like videos or images, a lot more than something like an article that requires a click and then a read and then a thought about what you read and then maybe a little caption to share if you want to share it further, or maybe an understanding of what you read, hopefully, if you want to get into a fight in the comments section. And so when we talk about these partisan entities, what we need to understand is that they understand how social media works, how social media algorithms prioritize what is being put in front of our eyes. But when we talk about more traditional media, we sort of have these pre-existing ways of presenting what we've written or what we've researched that might not necessarily do well on social media. And we don't know why outside of guessing.
But I just to argue that point a little bit, I think that we're also just not playing the same game. You know, we're trying.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're trying. Don't always get it right, but we really attempt to be as neutral and balanced as possible. We try not to be sensational with our headlines and the way we're presenting information, whereas they're trying to do that. That's their whole point. The more sensational, the better, because then that's going to catch your eye. So if you're seeing two different stories and one is a straightforward, boring news headline that says, you know, this candidate releases platform point number 28, mm-hmm. versus one that says this candidate is a lying dirtbag and here's all the reasons why, I mean, which one? I'm a little more interested in the second one. I think everybody is, just naturally sort of gets you a little more fired up.
Right. You talked a bit about algorithms and how they work. Is there, could you walk us through a bit more of the science behind that? What are we seeing when we open up our Twitter pages or our Facebook pages? What's happening behind the scenes?
So that's a really good question, because we don't know. Social media companies have not made their algorithms open to the public, like the previous panel was saying, both who's creating them and what they are. And the way that an algorithm works is it's essentially an equation that, did I just talk myself into a corner here? It's a computer equation that is set to get a desirable outcome. And what we think that outcome might be is get people to stick around social media as much as possible. But we don't know. We don't know how these algorithms are coded. And these social media companies have not necessarily been very forthcoming with that. And that's a problem, because we don't know what type of biases could be in the computer code that is controlling our social media networks that we don't know about.
So what are the social media companies? Oh, I mean, they're coming across and they're saying that they're, you know, deleting accounts, or they're making sure you don't see any of that stuff. So is there anything that they're coming out and actually doing that we know of? And what is government doing? Are any governments around the world taking action on this?
Well, Canada has made some moves to at least, you know, with the third parties, for example, they introduced new rules around if you spend more than $500 on any kind of political advertising, you have to register. You have to say who's giving you money and what you're spending it on, which is pretty straightforward, but a lot of countries don't even have that. And they're improving a little bit the regulations on social media. I think that that's really the only way to crack down on it, because at the end of the day, the social media companies are businesses and profits their bottom line. So whatever they can do to increase their profits without having to worry about pleasing the government too much is better for them. The only reason they're reacting to certain, you know, removing certain pages and stuff is because of government pressure and public pressure. People calling it out and saying, I'm not going to keep using Facebook if these hateful people are given a platform. Maybe I'm cynical, but I don't know that they would do this without that kind of pressure.
So I think people in this room obviously are here because they're informed on this, and I think there's a lot of people who are, but then there's a lot of people who clearly are not informed on this. But are you saying that it's kind of up to us to speak out and say this is what we kind of demand, you know, transparency?
Partially. The question of regulation is a really tricky one. Because, as we know, these companies have been a little bit unwilling to talk to governments globally, including Canada's government, when Mark Zuckerberg didn't show up to our parliament. And at the same time, governments are sort of starting to wake up to just how much power these platforms hold. In the UK, one committee called Facebook a digital gangster, which is very strong words. but at the same time, I think the one thing that we really need to be aware of is while Western governments hold the power to keep these platforms accountable, much of the developing world, where the danger of disinformation is much higher, cannot even get these companies to return their phone calls. And so when we talk about our responsibility, outside of being responsible consumers and writing to our MPs and doing all the things, you know, minimizing our time on social media, if that's something that you choose to do, there's very little we can do because we've allowed these giant corporate behemoths to be in charge of the information that the majority of the world is getting. And so really, it's up to our governments to sort of put their foot down and say, no, here's how we would like for this to go now.
I'm still hoping for, I have little kids, and I know, Supriya, you have a kid too. Like, I'm hoping for that pendulum swing where, you know, people just stop or use less of it or something happens because I don't know how much worse it can get, but it just seems like it just keeps, people are getting even more addicted. Let me ask you, though, because you mentioned other countries and you mentioned vulnerable countries. Are there any lessons we can learn from other elections we've seen? Philippines, Brazil, India. Have you noticed anything that's even come out of there that you can compare to here?
I think that the primary lesson to be learned about disinformation globally is that it's a social justice issue. Disinformation targets the most vulnerable. It targets immigrants. It targets the LGBTQ community. It targets women. It targets people of color. And what we've seen is that governments are willing to just throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear. And that means renting out accounts to see if they can trick you. That means targeting activists. That means using platforms that are more closed, like WhatsApp or Facebook groups or iMessage or what have you, to sort of do whatever they can to achieve whatever ends they, whatever goals that they have set for themselves. And a lot of the times, those goals are pretty scary. And that's sort of why we talk about disinformation as a systemic issue, because the one-off of whether Justin Trudeau is Fidel Castro's son or not is not necessarily the most important thing in the world. But when you realize that the amount of countries that have state-sponsored disinformation agencies have doubled over the last couple of years, you understand that it's a systemic issue rather than an issue of one fact being wrong.
You talked about the demo, right? This target demo, these people who are vulnerable. Is that what we're seeing? You talked about it worldwide, but Kaylee, is that what we're seeing here in Canada too? Are they targeting, you know, specific people who might not be looking at the bigger picture?
I think with the kind of disinformation that's being shared, definitely. And also just a lot of it is on Facebook because that's where the majority of Canadians are online, and a lot of older Canadians are on Facebook, and it's this sort of ripe environment for disinformation to spread, and especially as we start moving into more siloed platforms where you're going into private groups, where you're taking it into Messenger maybe, and makes it even harder to debunk things. It makes it harder for anybody to kind of moderate it or get in there or see what's spreading. That's the greater concern for me.
Everybody kind of sitting in this echo chamber, right? Yelling, and just listening to like-minded people. How can our audience become their own editors? How can they find and filter and protect themselves to be engaged citizens?
The number one thing I like to say is that if you're reading or you're seeing something online that's giving you an immediate strong emotional reaction, that is your number one clue that someone is trying to manipulate you. So just take a second, and you can still share it later, but take a second, maybe try and find another source, maybe try and find a little more context to it, maybe there's more to the story, maybe you'll do research and find that this is completely true and you're still outraged, and then you can share away. But that kind of immediate reaction, and we all get it, we're all susceptible to it, and it sort of overrides the part of your brain that thinks critically normally because you just want to react. So taking that extra second is going to save a lot of grief down the line, I think. And then there's lots of, if you want to go a little bit further, you know, we at CBC have some guides online. We have a Facebook chat bot you can log into, and it'll like prompt you and give you little quizzes and things. There's lots of tools that you can use to be a little more proactive. And also just, yeah, like taking a break from social media. Talk in real life, IRL, to people in your life and get different perspectives that way. It's a lot harder to just...
That'd be so weird.
But I think it's a lot harder to just blow up at somebody when you're sitting right next to them talking. You can kind of understand their point of view a little differently.
And nuance, right?
Exactly. I mean,
that's such a big part of it, too. What would you say? What advice would you give, Jane?
So my number one practical advice, in addition to what Kaylee's already said, is learn how to do a reverse image search. If you don't know how to do it, it's really easy. You right-click on an image, and then you click Search Google for Image. What that will do is it will bring up all other instances of that image being on the internet. And more often than not, if it's a meme or an article that's taken out of context, you'll see it. You'll see Snopes or the CBC or BuzzFeed or PolitiFact or somebody else have wrote it up, or you can judge for yourself sort of looking at other ways where it has appeared. I also think that we should all just sort of take care of each other. A lot of people are really hesitant about telling other people or calling out other people when they've shared disinformation. But if you message somebody privately and say, hey, listen, this thing that you posted on Facebook or this thing that you posted on Twitter, I think that that might not be right. Don't be confrontational about it, but say, listen, we're all trying to do our best here, and I get it that sometimes we make mistakes, but maybe consider taking it down. Here's a couple of things that I found that might help or that expand on the point that you were trying to make. The last thing is, if you're really proactive, there's been a lot of really great citizen journalists who start blogs and their own Facebook pages and look for these networks. They look for fake accounts. They look for fake websites, and then they post them online. And then reporters like me and Kaylee find them and write about them. And then we call up Facebook and we say, hey guys, what the heck's this? And then they take it down. There are ways that you can help this issue. But I would say that the most important thing is to be very careful with what you read and log off once in a while.
Have either of you almost believed a fake news story or something that's come across your desk or on your social media feed where you kind of had that gut reaction? Or
I mean, I think everybody is susceptible to it. And if anyone tells you like, oh, like I would never fall for fake news, like that person's lying. So I can't think of a specific example, but
I'm sure there's been times,
as the previous panelists were saying, like if it does align with something I already believe, I already think is true, I'm definitely going to be more likely to think like, oh yeah, this is definitely true. I knew it all along. Like, you know, it's natural.
Human nature.
It's human nature. So being aware that we're all susceptible to it is helpful. And yeah, just being really... think critically about everything you're reading, every source that you come across. And I say this and people go like, well, what, even the CBC? Yes, because because we're human and we make mistakes. And while we're not actively sowing disinformation and we correct the mistakes when we make them, we need readers to often help call those out and point out if we've made a mistake. So everything you're reading, maybe get a second source, think critically, don't just take anything at face value.
I was going to just tell you all that our job has never been harder than it is now. I mean, we get videos in all the time, and we don't know if they're real. We work so hard to verify them. It's not about being first anymore with a story. It's about being right. So we often have to just sit and take a breath, even though we want to run with something. But have a balanced news diet. Like, that is the biggest thing. That is the best thing you can do. Look at all sources. Don't just I don't watch even just global. I look at so many different sources to get information, because you never know. We had an example recently where there was somebody who was holding up who went on a racist tirade in front of the Toronto sign. You might have seen it. Some news organizations posted that right away. We waited. I'm so glad we did. And we found out that that person had mental health issues. And that was a red flag for us. And we're really glad that we didn't post that right away. But there's that, you know, that instant society we live in where, you know, Nescafe journalism is just the norm. And so it's really important to, you know, dig deep and try to find find a solution. Is there anything that either if you want to tell our audience in order to something that they should look for this election? Is there anything specific that you want to leave them with?
While disinformation that we've talked about is a problem on social media, it doesn't just come out of nowhere. So look at the social issues that matter to you. Look at the political platforms that you think you agree or disagree with. And try to get educated on them outside of the social media environment, because that ultimately is the best antidote. Because if you understand what it is that you care about, what it is that you're voting for, or what you're not voting for, that is going to make disinformation so much less effective when you do come across from it.
I think I would just say two things. So one, Jane sort of mentioned off the top, but about how news organizations making a mistake and correcting the record and doing everything we can to make sure that that record is corrected in every instance is not disinformation. That's a different thing. And someone having a different opinion than you is also not disinformation. And I get these things flagged to me constantly on Twitter. You know, I feel like a teacher like breaking up two kids squabbling in a class or something, because people say like this side said this side said that, and it's like that is just two different opinions, and that's not always a matter of fact, it's a matter of perspective, and we have to be willing to have all different kinds of points of view in a democracy.